Unlabeled Leadership is a volunteer service. We appreciate our guests for their stewardship and remarkable stories. We also appreciate listeners like you who back the show with star reviews and contributions.
Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 156, Mike O'Teep Helps You Connect to What's Needed. Here's a shout out to listeners in the Canary Islands, Spain, and South Denmark, in the United States, Centerville, Virginia, Hendersonville, Tennessee, Hendersonville, North Carolina, and Peachtree City, Georgia. With that, let's get started. Michael is the owner and lead training consultant with the company Teep Training International, or TTI. Through TTI, Michael and his colleagues partner with clients through the entire learning strategy and curriculum development processes. Michael conducts business and personal effectiveness design, training delivery, coaching, train the trainer, and training strategy development for a wide spectrum of customers. On his LinkedIn page, he has several recommendations. Here's one of the recommendations. Mike is a true partner in learning development. We work together in the design and collaboration of our manager training program. With his expertise, insight, and overall approach, we were very successful initiating a program that our leaders loved. Mike's keen intuition, sense of self, and the ability to relate to his audience kept our leaders engaged and wanting more. Michael is someone you might want to get to know. Part 1. Missing the whole story. The meaning of leadership has changed substantially in the 21st century. Now leadership is about helping other people grow mentally and morally. It's about helping you see yourself differently, the people around you differently, and how you view your environment. In this story, Michael shares how someone helped him develop and showed real leadership. Here's Michael to explain.
There are quite a few life-changing moments over a career. When I think about it and I look back to my early days of facilitation of learning and development internally, I was lucky enough to have some great mentors. And one of the mentors took a chance on me and brought me to London to work with him. So I was learning and running new training events for a very large corporation. It was in that moment that I learned a lot about leadership from him and his way of being. And one of the things that was life-changing for me was when I started that role, I had that kind of imposter syndrome, you know, where you feel as though, oh, really? Am I doing this? I don't have enough knowledge or background. And I really wanted to do well. So I focused on, well, whatever they tell me, I'm going to work on it and get better. Whatever they tell me, I'm going to work on and get better. There was a moment that I had with my manager and mentor during that where we sat down for a one-to-one after a number of training courses I've been running fairly early on in my work there in London. He was telling me about all the good stuff that I was doing. You know, that's great. And so-and-so had given you good feedback. And, you know, I was nodding along. I remember him saying, well, there's just a few small things that I'd like adjusted. And it's that point that I picked up my pen and started looking at, okay, well, what is it you want me to get better at? And he pointed at the notice boards that I've been putting up. He was talking about the use of white space, better presenting of them, a board, and I was writing everything down he said. Then he just stopped dead, just stopped. And I remember it like it was yesterday. Do you not value everything I'm telling you? So he wasn't frustrated, but he was definitely changed his tone. What do you mean? He said, well, I've just told you all the great things you've done, the great feedback you've got. You've just come to London. It's a huge success. And the only time you pay attention, or I feel you pay attention because you grabbed your pen, is when I'm telling you about a small thing about notice boards that needs to be corrected. And in that moment, Gary, my brain just went, oh, okay, I've got the wrong angle here. I asked him at the moment, what do you mean by that? And he said, look, you're missing out on the whole picture. It took me a while to get that, to sink it in. But I've always been a pleaser, people pleaser, and I hadn't realized it. And what that leader did was just to stop me dead and give me the feedback I needed in the moment. He's like, look, you're not looking at the whole picture. You can learn from your stuff that you're doing really well. Yes, of course, you want to develop areas that you need to develop, but it's not the whole picture. And I was always stressed at, well, what was I doing wrong? What could I do better? When really I needed to get the whole picture and enjoy the moment. And now, 25 years later, I definitely look at the whole picture. But it was that moment that definitely changed my outlook on how I receive feedback, looking at the whole picture. It was a moment in time that I'll never forget, Gary.
What I find amazing about this is that so many people, when they go into, say, the traditional performance reviews, they go in and they say, okay, let's not do the sandwich, meaning tell me something that I'm doing well and then use that as a way of softening the critique and then tell me something positive again.
Right.
Just tell me what I'm doing wrong or what I need to improve on. A lot of people gloss over or do not see the emphasis of the things they're doing well and think about how they can improve and strengthen what they're doing well.
Yeah, it is missing. When a leader says, oh, have you got 5 minutes? I've got to give you some feedback. You don't think they're going to give you anything positive, right?
Yeah.
The first thought is, what have I done wrong? And we're still living in that space. And it took a manager to change his tone, not frustration, but change the tone to get my attention, because he knew what he needed to say, but he knew I wasn't listening. I was writing down small things. You got to give people a little bit of a moment. You know, I totally believe, and part of my leadership training that I do is, how do you put others first and connect with others? Is you got to be real about when you see pieces of feedback you want to give to reinforce what someone's doing well, give it. And when you need to redirect, give that feedback. You don't have to say the sweet sandwich, you know, the feedback sandwich. You don't have to say, oh, Gary, you're doing a great job here. It's fantastic. There's just this one thing. But overall, it's great. That just exaggerates, doesn't it? The fact that, oh, there is something you really wanted to tell me in the middle. And that's what you listen for. So I feel we're a product of that environment for sure. And it takes a moment to say, well, what did you like about that?
Our brains expect the worst. It's just the conditioning. If we assume the worst being said, then it's safe that way because we could run from it.
Yeah.
Fight or flight. But if we assume that it's not bad, then we set ourselves up to become prey, you know? But I mean, so what's the word for it?
It's reactive.
Well, yeah. It's primitive almost, you know?
It is primitive. It is. We are built exactly that, to avoid threats and make ourselves comfortable. You know, there's tons of neuroscience. Anyone can look it up. You know, it's right there. We're not wired to say, I'm curious. What do you mean by that? When somebody approaches like, this is terrible. That's not our first reaction. Our first reaction is, I'm going to need to defend myself, or I need to distance myself from this. Not leaning in and saying, I'm curious, why do you say that? To find out what's on this person's mind. It's not there, and there's a ton of stuff done on it. David Rock comes to mind, the Neuro Leadership Institute, and he's been talking about how do we get people into their more curious forward state of mind rather than reaction, flight or flee, which is what you were just talking about. Very primitive.
When someone approaches you to give you some feedback, whether positive or constructive, the reaction you have when, oh, can I speak with you for a minute? All of a sudden in our heads, stories pop in. Oh no, I did something wrong.
Yeah.
And then because of that belief, I did something wrong, then an emotion occurs. Panic, worry, concern. It has nothing to do with reality or what you observe.
No, you're projecting, aren't you? You're projecting the likability. Oh, what did I do that they didn't like?
Exactly.
And then that connects to your, I want to be liked. And people don't realize that that's quite binary part of us. Are we similar? Are things smoothing smoothly? And often it's because we're not used to getting feedback on a regular basis. What a great world it would be if we just got feedback all the time informally, and we were giving it to our managers and they were giving it to us. And that's the culture that we worked in. And not many places are like that. But if you did, what it does is it reduces the threat because you're used to getting feedback. So if somebody walks on, I just want to have a couple of words with you about how that presentation went. And you're not used to that. You're like, you go back to your natural reaction. And yet it's difficult to stop that. You know, it's very difficult to get an adaptive, calm mindset, which means that we are calm and curious about, well, we would just ask that. Okay, well, what is it you want to talk about? And I'd like to help you with that. I'd like to help. Maybe you've got questions that you needed further definitions on, or you're not clear about something, or you want me to add something or take something out. That's not criticism, or should I say negative feedback at all. That's just an ask. 9 times out of 10, that's what it is.
We give feedback out as if it's rationed.
Yes. Yes, that's so true. I work with a lot of organizations that are trying to break that mold, and they're trying very hard. That, look, you should be giving feedback all the time. Performance reviews should be a summary of the journey we've taken and not a surprise.
Exactly.
At the mid-year or end year, you know, depending on the organization size, you know.
Part 2, Honey on the Telegraph Poles. During the COVID pandemic, organizations needed to figure out how to adapt to the disruption. Business as usual? More like business as unusual. Michael begins this part by sharing how a CEO helped his executive team adapt to their circumstances and think about the business differently. Again, here's Michael.
Never let a good crisis go to waste when it comes to leadership. And it's very severe. COVID was a terrible experience for many. However, it did give opportunity for leaders. And I saw a number of my clients rise to that, the leader. And it's usually one specific person, what they say and what they do. It doesn't tend to be a whole organization, because an organization is made up of individuals. So I've been working a lot with the fintech industry and startup tech industry as well. And working with them, and they're all about change. So when COVID hit, everything stopped. If you were moving money around for restaurants, of course, that's not going to change. You know, that's going to disappear completely. Just poof, gone. I was lucky enough to be working with a fintech that had been around a few years and was going at a very good pace. They were building business. There were a number of mergers of other fintechs together to create a great support globally to the financial services industry. They wanted to grow in 2020 at a rate of 30 to 40%. Yeah, that's a huge amount of business they wanted to grow to. And of course, March 2020 hits, everything closes down, everything. So money's not moving as much. So there's no way they're going to achieve that. I remember sitting in on one of the more senior leadership meetings with the CEO. He was just talking about the reality of the situation and where we are, asking people for updates. And there was a lot of catastrophizing. You remember that we talked a little bit about that away state threat. Like, we're never going to be able to make our 30 to 40%. Never going to be able to get to the 30%. What are we going to do? You know? And they were very fixated on the old goal in the old world. The CEO used the what if example. Well, what if we didn't have to make that gain? We've already made some good gains. We already have some good revenue, and that's not going to go away this year. What would you do if you didn't have to grow the business by 30 to 40%? And it just created this huge calm. And it was a lot of silence to start with. But he went on with that. It got them built into groups. And eventually they came out for, well, why don't we start measuring the quality and the efficiency of what we're doing rather than the quantity, the scale? Because we just can't do that. It's very adaptive on the moment, really, from a full-out aggressive growth scale into, well, let's fix what we have. We're a number of different mergers coming together. We haven't fixed how our systems work together. Why don't we work on creating a quality product and efficiency, and then it will come back at some point. We can get back to that maybe in 2023. And it was watching that happen. It was showing a true leader not reacting to what's right in front of you, not being disrupted. You know, when you're disrupted,
yeah,
it's very much you're reacting to the situation. You can overreact, like, oh my goodness, this is the end of the world. You can underreact, oh, I'd be fine. COVID will be over by the summer. Or you can scenario plan. And that's what this leader did, just by asking the question, well, what if I took that off the table? So that was, for me, was one of the biggest examples going into COVID of leaders adapting to a crisis and an unknown.
What you just described was something difficult for people to understand. And what I mean is this, if you look at job descriptions, even some call for speakers or any type of a description involving a particular role, there's usually some words about resilience or adaptability. the phrase adaptive leadership is an incredible buzzword, but people don't understand what that is. And you just provided a very simple but powerful effect by just saying, what if we did not? That illustrated a change from moving forward with a strategy and finding tactics to try and achieve it to moving away from it to achieve something else. I think that's a fantastic example of adaptability.
And unfortunately, Gary, we don't see that because people are going to react naturally. You know, yeah. Leaders were under stress. They're always thinking about the shareholder. It depends on the size of the organization as well. So I think I was lucky to see that. And also it came from a more innovative, that's what they were doing. Fintechs were trying to shake up the financial services industry. But even then, I still very rarely see something like that. And I think it's got a lot to do with, well, buzzwords are great, like adaptive calm, adaptive mindset is a buzzword.
Yeah.
But what it means is everything's going off around you. You can have a moment and say, oh, this is a bad situation. I'm feeling a little bit threatened by this, but it's knowing that and then saying, okay, well, let's look at everything in front of us. Just revisit what we want to achieve. And you can only do that if you put roadblocks in front of you. And that's with a what if is a great exercise to do with leaders. What if, and then you take off the major restraint or their major, you know, what they're aiming towards, like the 30 to 40% revenue growth. Remove that. There's a lot of exercises you can do around innovation, creativity to get your groups of leaders, startups, it doesn't matter, thinking differently about what they see as the challenges in front of them. It usually starts with breaking down and getting people to focus on, okay, come up with any idea, brainstorm, you know, you've heard of brainstorming, right? Come up with all these ideas that are different. I'm going to say no idea is off the table. So get them to really go extreme. So that creates a creativity. And then you can get into the what ifs. And eventually you come down to, well, which of these options would be viable? But what you've done is you've stopped that reaction. You've stopped the overreaction and the underreaction. I know the CEO was a champion of growth mindset, has studied it, and it certainly showed.
One of the things about brainstorming is that no idea is off the table. And the beauty of that is that if you have an idea, even if it's absurd, it might trigger the next thinking from someone else. It might be what was needed to develop that creative, innovative, new way of looking at the situation or the strategy or what the organization is trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and it's really hard to do that. One of my fellow facilitators out of Sydney, Australia, Jane Thompson, she uses the example of icy cold most of the year, the electricity would go out because the electricity wires are on telegraph poles and it get iced up in storms and the weight of it brings down the wires. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a case study there where the electricity company looked at that and they came up with all these ideas. One was to put honey on top of the telegraph pole so that bears would try and shake to get it down and they would knock the ice off.
Wow.
You have to think about that example, but you have to get a group of people who are not conditioned by their surroundings. They're in a group. They're like, oh, well, that sounds like a silly idea. And as soon as you put down an idea like grizzly bear and honey, you're going to get people in the group that can't help themselves. And they're going to say, what's that? That's ridiculous, because it's a natural reaction. As a leader, we have to continue. Well, I have to catch that moment and says, tell me a little bit about the grizzly bear. That sounds really interesting. I've not heard of it before. That helps someone move into a forward state. The last statement of your colleague saying, well, that's ridiculous. How does that work? That moves people into an away state. It's how you facilitate an exercise that helps people to open up and unlock that potential. The bear and the honey, you're not going to do that. But what it does is it opens up the mind. Like, wow, yeah. Do you know what they did come up with in the end?
No idea.
They came up with hiring a helicopter just after ice storms, and they would hover the helicopter over the wires. The downdraft would be enough to blow the ice off the wires.
Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant idea. But they never would have come up with that if they hadn't been in a forward state, a curious state. And we have to remember that that's not an easy space to get a group of people to.
The idea of honey. Okay, you want to put something on the poles. Well, wait a minute. What about the wires? Maybe we could put something on the wires. I could see how that could generate from what may be absurd to some to something practical. That's why brainstorming can be highly effective.
I would say it's difficult to get the magic to happen in the room.
Yeah.
As you know, I've facilitated brainstorming exercises over decades. It's always when you get other people to look at someone else's brainstorm list, you know you're going to get the person who's going to shut things down.
Yes.
You're ready for it. Whoever's leading the meeting needs to be ready that it's going to happen. They're going to say, well, that'll never work. Well, we tried that. And it's all of those phrases we have to get over. You could think about there's the wet test, which is all about instead of saying, we tried that before, that'll never happen or that'll never work. They'll never go for that. Ask some questions instead. And those questions would be, where has this worked in practice when someone comes up with an idea? Obviously not the grizzly bear and the honey, because you can imagine we're electrocuting bears. You can imagine them climbing the poles and getting electrocuted. So we don't want to be doing that. Not a good reputation thing. So obviously that's not. But other ideas where people said, which is more likely is, well, why don't we do X, Y, and Z? And people roll their eyes. Like, oh, that person doesn't know we've tried something like that before. Is to say, has this worked in practice before? Can you give an example of where it's worked? And T, where could we try it out, the wet test? If you ask one or two of those questions, it stops us thinking this will never work. And we start trying to get more information because we're making an assumption that someone's idea is not going to work just based on what they've said and not on any evidence. By asking one or two of those questions of the wet test, we can get people curious, which is what was needed during this time of COVID. We've got a huge amount of uncertainty right now. We don't know how it's infecting people. There's less measurement of it. So if anything, we're being pushed into a more uncertain world than we were at the beginning. At least at the beginning, we were uncertain of what damage that the COVID could do, but we knew we had things in process, shut down, PCR tests, boom, boom, boom. And now as things open up, family member or neighbors, oh, I've got COVID. Like, well, what do we do with that? You don't all have to quarantine anymore. And it's that we're causing more uncertainty again. So imagine that in the real world, imagine that in the world of work and coming up with fresh ideas. We need to enable them to be adaptive, calm, and scenario plan and what if in the moment.
There's a book out there called Nuts, N-U-T-S, about Southwest Airlines. In that book, there's about 15 pages about leadership. Even though it was published in 1998, they actually suggested something called collaborate and inquiry. I hear you say, with someone in the room during a brainstorming session, they might say, well, this will never work, or we tried that before, or one of my favorite, well, that's not the way we do things around here. The way you disable that thinking is by shifting from commenting to inquiring and getting people on the formula of when someone contributes something, inquire. Don't assume that you know everything about it or focus on why it won't work. Why in the world did that person say whatever it was? What you've talked about is the need and the importance of inquiring to better understand, which opens up possibilities that the person who might have said this will never work might end up saying, wait a minute, your rationale.
Something else.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to find the right answer the first time. You know that you need to be in a state where you try and build on ideas. Be comfortable with not knowing. It's the uncertainty. The only way to do that is to strip off and make a safe area where people feel they're not being judged when they're coming up with their ideas. That this is actually a playground right now. The next hour of this meeting is, we're just coming up with ideas, Leave everything else out of it. Let's just, your worries today, the challenges. You may have had a disagreement with another leader who's in the room on this brainstorm in that morning. Yeah, it's all got to be left behind. Otherwise, it doesn't work. So inquiry is definitely be curious. And my favorite line is when I'm getting something unexpected from a client or a leader in the training room, something like, who wrote this? Or they say something, they've had a reaction. I stop myself. And my favorite line is, I'm curious, why do you say that? It's my roadblock to stop me to start justifying and over-explaining the meaning of whatever they've been misunderstood or they're frustrated about.
Part 3, the power of the one-to-one. In the third part, I invite guests to advise us on how we can strengthen our leadership. Michael does just that in the context of the one-to-one meeting. Here's Michael to explain.
So my advice is to start all one-to-ones with three questions. This is all you have to do. You could throw all your updates out the window because you're going to get to it anyway. Okay. First thing is, how are you doing? Simple question. Secondly, how are you winning? How are you getting things done, or what's been successful for you? Whatever word works for you, but focus them on the good stuff they're doing. And if it's, hey, I made it to my computer this morning, great. You know, it's a step in the right direction. And lastly, how can I support you? So it builds that one-to-one relationship. How are you doing? How are you excelling? How are you winning? What's working for you right now? Any of those questions in there. And lastly, how can I support you? If you change your one-to-one, start with that. I promise you'll give the right level of support to the person and get their productivity where it needs to be, plus their psychological safety and their well-being as well.
Thanks to Michael Teep for sharing his stories. If you'd like to learn more about Michael, go to the show notes. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening. This is Gary DePaul. Until next time, lead on.